From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. A high-stakes U.S. midterm election is only 1 month away. As U.S. voters head to the polls to elect a new Congress, the outcome is sure to have a profound impact on the next 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. In this first installment of a two-part series examining prospects for Democrats and Republicans in the 2018 midterm elections, we talk first with a Democratic strategist. Currently, Republicans control both chambers of Congress and the White House. However, polls indicate a level of voter dissatisfaction with the Republican Party and their current standard-bearer, U.S. President Donald Trump. What was once the party of free trade and fiscal discipline now stands for protectionism and anti-immigrant sentiment. At least since Donald Trump became president, Republicans who dare to deviate from Mr. Trump's orthodoxy are either retiring from public office or are bracing for strong Democratic headwinds. Are Democrats poised to win enough seats in the lower chamber of Congress, the House of Representatives, to take control of that chamber? What are their prospects to change control of the Senate, where Republicans hold a very slim majority of 51 to 49? We'll ask our guest, Will Marshall, president and founder of Progressive Policy Institute, or PPI. That's a centrist, Washington-based policy group established in 1989. PPI's mission is to create radically pragmatic ideas for moving America beyond ideological and partisan deadlock. Will Marshall is also an honorary vice president of Policy Network, an international think tank launched by former British Prime Minister Tony Blair to promote progressive policy ideas throughout the democratic world. He is editor and co-editor of many books and articles. Marshall currently serves on the board of directors for the National Endowment for Democracy. He also has considerable campaign and political experience, having worked as a speechwriter and spokesperson for several Democratic candidates. Before becoming involved in politics and public policy, he was a journalist in Virginia, including a stint with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And Will Marshall joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Will, let's ask the big question. We know that Democrats are very energized for the midterm elections. They oppose President Trump's policies and abrasive style on both the domestic and global stage. What are, in your view, the main factors that account for so much enthusiasm on the Democratic side? And to what extent do you think they will propel Democrats into winning many seats and potentially capturing the majority in the House of Representatives?
Yes, well, Democrats are energized. There's no question about it. They're looking at Donald Trump's historically low approval ratings, which are hovering down around 40%. And typically, presidents going into a midterm election would rather be closer to 50%. And he's just not been able in his nearly 2 years as president to expand his support in the country. He has a very hard core of intense support, but not breadth of support.
Now, your organization, the Progressive Policy Institute, is described as, quote, radically pragmatic, which is very interesting. It sounds like an oxymoron. But of course, in this polarized partisan climate, we could probably use more so-called radically moderate policies that could bring both Democrats and Republicans together. Do you think Democratic centrists in this polarized climate, which right now seems to favor extremes on both sides, could win the day?
Well, it's a tough place to be in this tribalized period in American politics. There's no question about it. Everybody's in their team and cheering on their team, and it seems that compromise is kind of a sin with true believers on both sides of the aisle. But the American political system, our democracy, is built around power sharing, checks and balances. The system is designed to force the parties to compromise and find common ground. And it's not working now. And I think the country sees that, sees a federal government that can't solve problems and is deeply unhappy about it. What people want is some very substantial change, departures from the status quo, which is why we want radically pragmatic solutions. People aren't up for little tweaks in a status quo that they find intolerable. So everybody wants a bolder change now. And the trick here is to embrace a bold formula for change that can command majority support.
How much of the Democratic Party strategy this year is about being anti-Trump? And how much Is it offering an alternative agenda for the country?
Well, it's a midterm election, and midterm elections are local elections. They really aren't about a national party ideology or governing agenda because they're just a series of races across the map. Where the party, where Democrats will debate their philosophy, will be after the midterm when we get into the next presidential cycle and the nomination battle. But I think the answer to your question, Carol, depends on where you are. This is a big, diverse country. And if you're in a deep blue place like New York or California or Massachusetts, well, you can't be critical enough of Donald Trump. But if you're out there in Ohio or Kansas or Iowa or even New Hampshire, more red to purple places, you've got to be careful because Democrats there can't just rely on Democratic votes. They have to win some independents and even some moderate Republicans. So they're not keying in on hatred of Donald Trump. They can't really afford to be successful in this more competitive terrain in American politics.
Let's talk about this so-called alternative agenda then. What are, in fact, the major issues, aside from opposing many of Mr. Trump's policies, are the Democrats running on? Now, when we talk about Mr. Trump's policies, they go from having withdrawn from the Paris Climate Accord, which rubs many Democrats and probably many Republicans actually the wrong way, or downplaying Russian interference in our democracy, or even the much vaunted tax cut, which actually objective analysis shows benefits wealthy Americans more than the middle class. So are these some issues? What other issues are the Democrats running on?
Well, those are important issues. I would also highlight health care. When you look at the polling, health care looms large in voters' minds. They don't like what Donald Trump and the Republicans have done in trying to kill Obamacare, kill the Accountable Care Act that was passed under President Obama. So a lot of people are feeling vulnerable. They're feeling that if they have what's called a pre-existing condition, meaning if they're sick, they may find it hard to get insurance if they lose their job and have to go back into the insurance marketplace and find something that they won't be able to afford it. So there's a lot of angst out there about health care, and it's top of mind for voters, and the Republicans are clearly on the defensive here because of their repeated efforts to sabotage the Accountable Care Act.
President Trump touts what is called the so-called America First policy on the global stage. He's famous for opposing globalization, which is a trend that is going to be very hard to reverse, but important to at least mitigate the downsides of it. But nonetheless, he has railed against that particular phenomenon, which has rubbed many of our stalwart allies the wrong way. To what extent are foreign policy issues a part of these midterm elections for Democrats?
Probably less than they will be in the presidential election. Again, that's where the big security issues and the party's different approaches to them are going to be really important. But having said that, people are concerned about Russian interference and the fact that the president of the United States continues to deny basically that it happened, and therefore they don't think he's going to be vigilant about foreign interference in these midterm elections. People who pay attention to foreign policy are concerned, very much concerned, about his trade wars. Here again, we're ripping up relationships with America's closest allies, our European allies, our NATO partners, Canada and Mexico, our biggest trading partners and closest neighbors. And the president seems to not care at all about sowing ill will with America's friends to get marginal gains in trade agreements. So I think there's a big concern out there about his trade war philosophy, his high tariff view. And by the way, Carol, it's really a deep concern among Republican voters out in the heartland. Farmers are really worried that Donald Trump's tariff policy is creating retaliation against American farm exports. We've already seen that. So a lot of American companies are now worried that this president could lead us into a situation where American companies are actually disadvantaged by the retaliation other countries are leveling at this president's trade policies.
And could that perhaps prompt some of these normally Republican-voting farmers to vote for Democrats?
I think it could. Now, the pain's only begun to be felt, but Mexico's buying soybeans from other sources. It's a huge commodity export crop for the United States. We're seeing wheat and other sales off, beef and pork. So I was out in Iowa last year, and I heard this from farmers and agribusiness interests. They are deeply concerned that, ironically, the America First trade policy that the president says he's in favor of doesn't seem to understand how important exports and finding foreign markets are to American agriculture. Hugely successful sector of the American economy, but they depend on exports.
What about the Democratic position on immigration reform? Another very key issue that Mr. Trump has run on, is continuing to run on. He seems to be very much skeptical about not just illegal immigration, which is certainly justified, but even legal immigration. And I would like to know very much what the Democratic position is with respect to immigration reform.
Well, again, I have to say, in a midterm election, Democrats are all over the map on immigration. If you're down on the border, if you're down the Southwest, if you're in Texas, you're going to have one view. If you're in San Francisco or Manhattan, it probably isn't a big issue for you. So the answer is there isn't a coherent view yet, and that's a bit of a problem or a challenge for the Democrats, because clearly immigration was the issue that allowed Donald Trump to bond with deeply conservative Tea Party kinds of voters in the first place, way back in his presidential run. It's key to understanding his grip on a certain part of the American electorate. And so it presents challenges to Democrats who generally don't want to talk about it and want to focus on other issues. But if you're down by the border, you're going to talk more about security. You're going to talk more also about toughening workplace enforcement. And Democrats everywhere want to see a humane immigration policy that allows hardworking people to work their way, to earn their way toward citizenship, or at least to earn their way toward legal status. And of course, all Democrats think that kids who were brought here at young age and have done well here ought to find a path to citizenship too, the Dreamers. So, you know, the things that Democrats agree on, but we haven't quite gotten to a place where we can answer some of the complaints or the concerns of voters to whom immigration is a big salient concern and who have flocked to Trump as a result.
I would like to follow up with you on immigration in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Will Marshall, president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute, and that's a policy group based here in Washington affiliated with the Democratic Party. And we're discussing prospects for Democrats in the upcoming midterm elections. And next week, we'll talk with a Republican strategist. I'm Carol Castiel, and this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You can also find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to a valued listener, Cherno Jallo from Liberia. Thanks for writing in. If you want to hear your name on the air, please give us some feedback about this show and send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Will Marshall, president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute. Will, let me follow up on this question about immigration, because we hear in his rallies President Trump saying that the Democrats are for wide open borders. They're also encouraging illegal immigrants to vote, which of course is not even possible. But nonetheless, this kind of distortion, this type of narrative, which is false, could rattle people. What are Democrats doing to combat these blatantly false assertions?
Well, you know, you're right. This president's standard of truthfulness on immigration is on a par with his level of truthfulness on other issues. That is to be historically low. You really can't trust what he says on it, but these are effective tropes that he uses, that criminal aliens are flooding our street, or aliens are more likely to be criminals, which isn't really true. So he has definitely tapped into public fears and is exploiting them in a very demagogic way. But I want to step back, if it's all right. We're talking about American politics, but I just got back from Europe. And immigration is roiling the whole Western world. And it is the number one driver of this national populism that we see rising in Europe and has already risen in the United States in the person of Donald Trump. So I think progressives everywhere are not doing a really good job of grappling with public concerns, some of which are invalid, some of which are nativist, some of which are even racist, but then some of which are valid. People feel that they've lost control of their borders, that their national identity is being compromised, that there's a total breakdown of their ability to determine who gets in the country and who becomes a citizen. And we've got to do a better job than we're doing thus far of speaking to those concerns without in any way lending credence to Donald Trump's nativist message.
Let me ask you about other issues that the Democrats are running on besides health care. What about sensible gun legislation? Any other specific issues that you think are winning issues for Democrats across the country?
I think the main issue after health care is the economy. Even though on the surface things look good, we have low unemployment, we have pretty robust growth, we're still dealing with the lingering aftershocks of the economic crisis of 2008 and 2009. And there is a really strong feeling in America of injustice, of inequality, that the rich have gotten richer, middle class people have gotten poorer, and that our policies protect big actors, big economic actors, and Wall Street, and don't do enough to spread economic opportunity, new job creation, new business creation around the map. And that's, I think, very important out there in the real battleground of American politics, which is Midwest. I mean, it's also the South, but really where Trump won this election was by turning Democratic voters his way in 2016 in a handful of really important old manufacturing states like Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. It's here the Democrats need to do better, and they need a message that speaks to the real economic aspirations of these voters for better jobs, to be cut in on new economy prosperity. They want in on the digital economy, and we have to have better ideas for spreading that opportunity to them. It has to do with broadband in rural places, has to do with pushing investment out of the cities where most of the growth has been concentrated. So a lot of Democrats are beginning to talk about that, and they're beginning to talk, and this is crucial, they're beginning to talk about skills and how you create an alternative to college for the two-thirds or three-quarters of young Americans who don't go to college but need to upskill if they're going to be competitive in today's digital economy.
Will Marshall, to what extent will what some Democrats and many Republicans actually believe is the need for better oversight of the executive branch be an issue in this election? Because what we're seeing is a Republican Congress that refuses to hold some members of the executive branch to account. We've seen a number of examples of outright corruption, the use of public funds for private gain. We saw several members of the cabinet having to leave, Scott Pruitt, for one, who was the head of the EPA, many others. To what extent will that be an issue? And again, I'm not talking about necessarily launching impeachment proceedings. If the Democrats, for example, do win the majority in the House of Representatives, to what extent is that oversight issue a very important one?
It's critical. I think that the people in this country are worried about Republican dominance of the national political scene and also states, you know, and they're looking for a check, an effective political check on this Republican government and particularly on this president, Donald Trump, who has shown so little respect for the independence of the institution, key institutions of law enforcement and American democracy. I mean, this idea of him undermining the FBI, undermining the independence of the Department of Justice. This is scary to people, and it ought to be scary. This is a president who seems to think that everything should be judged as to whether it's good for him or people are loyal to him. But these institutions are supposed to be neutral. They're supposed to enforce the law. They're not supposed to be arms of Donald Trump's political ambition. So I think that people are deeply concerned that there is no effective check on this president. And that's one of the reasons I do think you'll see a wave that propels Democrats into the majority in the House, so that at least, you know, the House will become a bastion of resistance to this president. And there's no question that if Democrats win back the House, you're going to see a lot of investigations and a lot of oversight and hearings, because there is the feeling of a rogue regime in Washington that has to be checked.
Should the Democratic Party move to actually impeach President Trump if they do win back one or both chambers?
Only if there's really solid grounds to do that. Impeachment's a tricky business. I watched as the Republicans fumbled the impeachment drive against Bill Clinton back in the day, and it really damaged them. So you can really hurt yourself if you get it wrong. I think, you know, at this point, it's not the wise option for Democrats because we don't have the clear, incontrovertible evidence of a high crime or misdemeanor that would, as the Constitution says, warrant an impeachment proceeding. My own view is that a president that has such a tortured relationship with the truth, you know, every day gives you grounds for thinking that he isn't fit for office and ought to be removed. But, you know, we can't only preach to the converted, to the choir. We have to convince fair-minded Americans and independent voters and even responsible Republicans that we have a strong case. We have a case that's compelling enough to bring it. At this point, I don't see it. But you never know with this president. That could change.
Will Marshall, the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court demonstrates how important the judiciary is, in particular to the Republican Party, much more so than Democrats historically. Has the controversy over his nomination done anything to impress upon Democratic voters the importance of this branch of government, since the Supreme Court obviously has the power, given the composition of it, to overturn rulings that are important, particularly to many Democratic voters, such as reproductive freedom, the right to an abortion, and so forth? To what extent is the Supreme Court now going to be more important for Democratic voters?
It's hugely important for all voters, Democrats, Republicans, independents. It's because the Supreme Court has become the ground zero in the American culture wars. And this seems to be at the center of our politics now. We don't seem to be able to pass budgets and to fund infrastructure and do all the sort of the normal business of government. What we do is we fight over culture all the time. And the Supreme Court is sort of the pivotal venue in which big cultural battles get decided, or at least they get contested. And here it's a double-edged sword, Carol, because yes, Democratic voters are very motivated to put up a barrier to Trump stacking the Supreme Court with ultra-conservatives that would tip the balance in a way that could cause really terrible repercussions in the country, deepen our divisions in a big way. But Republican voters also obviously care a lot about this. And in fact, one of the things that always astonishes me is that evangelical Christians who are strong Trump supporters, you know, this is a president who in so many ways flouts the values of evangelical Christians. His life has not exactly been an advertisement for those values, to put it mildly. But they're for him. Why are they for him? It's because of the court appointments, because they care about abortion. They care about all issues of gender and sexuality, and they don't want to see the Supreme Court fall into liberal hands. And so, yes, it's a critical voting issue, but it's critical to the motivating voters on both sides of the divide.
Let's turn now to voter demographics and groups that could favor the Democrats. We're seeing a record number of women running for office, and many women, even in suburban areas of the country, who tend to vote for Republicans are actually leaning toward voting for Democrats. So I assume women are an important target, perhaps the Latino vote. Talk about the constituencies that you're courting.
Well, women are a hugely important group, obviously. More than half the electorate has to be important. But there is a deep sense of estrangement, at least among many women in this country, toward this administration, Donald Trump in particular. He did worse with women voters than other groups, and that includes white working class women. He won them in the end, but by lower margins than he won men. And ridiculing the testimony of Ms. Ford in this Kavanaugh hearing isn't helping his popularity with women voters. But you're right, women are motivated. They want to run. They are running. They're winning all over the country. We're seeing a really wonderful crop of candidates out there, particularly on the Democratic side, who are in a position to win important races. And I think that's one of the big stories in this midterm election. But here's another big story that hadn't gotten hardly any attention. It's veterans. Democrats have done a wonderful job, and Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, an Iraq veteran himself, has been really instrumental in going out and helping the party recruit young veterans who really are appalled by the direction that Donald Trump is leading the country in toward a kind of a isolation or selfish foreign policy that they think will make us less safe, not more safe. And so we have a lot of really great veterans running. That's important because they're running out there in red zones in middle America, where it's really hard to say that this guy is some kind of Washington liberal, you know, if he's been a combat veteran in Iraq or in Afghanistan. So we have some very strong candidates, and that's one of the reasons I'm confident Democrats are going to win back the House, because the caliber of the candidates who we've recruited and who've won primaries is really high.
And interestingly, there are female veterans.
A lot of female veterans. Tammy Baldwin's already a member of the U.S. Senate, obviously, but she exemplifies the new breed of female veterans who have really come into public service. And it's natural when you think about it. These are people who serve their country in uniform, put their lives on the line, and they come back and they see their politics divisive and fomenting a kind of hatred, and they want to do something about it. So to me, that's a healthy sign of our system maybe having some self-corrective properties.
Indeed, we interviewed Elaine Lourdia several months ago, who is a female veteran running in Virginia as a Democrat. Is there a different calculation or strategy for Democrats trying to win back majorities in both the House and the Senate? For example, a more progressive push could win perhaps some House races, but analysts say a more moderate pitch might be better in the red states for Democrats so that they could keep their seats. How does the party balance this?
It's a great question, Carol, and we debate this all the time. Democrats love to debate each other on questions of philosophy and governing agenda. It's important to remember, again, how big and diverse the country is and how big and diverse the Democratic Party is and has to be if it's going to be a majority party in the country. So the answer varies. You know, we've had some very high-profile liberals like Alexandria Cortez in New York who beat a sitting congressman. But if you look at these veterans I just talked about out there in Iowa and Nebraska and the red parts of the country, they're not, because they can't, because they have to appeal to voters who are not now Democrats. They have to appeal to swing voters. So what I always say is the Democratic Party needs a big tent strategy. We can't afford to narrow ourselves ideologically or geographically. Let's not forget that going into this midterm election, Democrats are out of power. We're out of power in Washington, and we're out of power in most of the states. That means you can't just energize your base if your base isn't big enough to create a majority. You have to convert some voters. So you have to build new majorities where you do not now have them. So yes, a left-wing message may be effective in a deep blue urban district that, you know, goes Democratic by 10, 20, and 30 points. But when you're out there in the competitive terrain in America, that's not the way Democratic candidates win, and they know it. And the good news is both sides can point to victories. You know, the left can say, well, we've had some great runs in certain places, and it's true. And the more pragmatic wing of the Democratic Party can point to a lot of gains out there in the tougher terrain where we have to compete and win.
And as we close, Will Marshall, what are Democrats' vulnerabilities in your view? How do you guard against perhaps overconfidence, one? And then what about attempts at election fraud, like false posts on social media trying to undermine the Democratic message? We have intelligence assessments saying that even in the run-up to this year's midterm elections, that threats have expanded perhaps to suppress voter turnout, and even our state a voting apparatus could be threatened by foreign adversaries like the Russians and others who work for them.
Well, we know that that's a real threat after 2016. And by the way, the Russians didn't just intervene in the U.S. election. They intervened in French elections, German elections. It's part of their foreign policy now, so we can expect it to continue. And we need to be on guard. And who can trust this president who denied what all the intelligence agencies says happened, to be vigilant against this threat? So the rest of us have to be on our toes. And I think people are in the state election authorities. But in deep red states where voter suppression is unfortunately a policy, and particularly racial suppression, we've got to really keep our eyes open. But let me go back to what I think is really a pitfall for Democrats. We can't make this election or any election all about Donald Trump. It's very tempting because he flouts all conventions of honesty and decency in American politics, to put it bluntly. So it's tempting to say, just run against Trump. But that's not what the voters need to hear, particularly if they aren't with you already. If you're trying to persuade a voter to come over to your side, to go blue, to join the Democratic tent, you've got to offer a positive account of what you do, and smart candidates are doing that. This is not to say that any Democrat should hold back from criticism of President Trump when he deserves it. But if we become obsessed, if we become as strident and as dogmatically partisan as, say, Mitch McConnell and the Republicans are day in and day out, we hurt ourselves. We don't help ourselves. So we're saying to people, yes, oppose Donald Trump vigorously, but also take care to give the voters a positive account of what you would do once you get elected.
Will Marshall is president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute. Will, thank you very much for coming in and sharing your terrific insights.
It's my pleasure, Carol. Thank you.
And next week, we speak with a Republican strategist, so stay tuned. Press Conference USA on The Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.